What is up, business owners, entrepreneurs, and probably my grandma? Welcome to Business Vibe. Today's interview is with Kyle Bigley, co-founder of TextCart, a text message marketing service for Shopify stores. He shares so much about how he built his business, how he validated it, how he found his first customers, and how by overcoming the fear of raising prices, which everybody does in SaaS businesses, he was able to double his revenue. I hope you guys enjoy this business interview and get some value out of it. If you did, please hit that subscribe button. There are many more interviews to come.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, so I'm a 27-year-old entrepreneur background. Went to college at Penn State, studied finance and economics. Kind of thought I was going to go the investment banking route. That's at least what I told myself. Long story short, 5 super days later, never got the offer. So kind of realized I had to pivot. Always had a desire to own my own business, and specifically had some experience in e-commerce, because in my early days of college, I was introduced to drop shipping. I had owned a small brand online selling men's jewelry. I ultimately had exited that before I graduated. And in that time of operating that business, kind of figured out that I wanted to work more B2B, wanted something that had subscription revenue. And this was 2019. The SMS landscape was pretty new at the time, and just knew that there was a sort of ripe opportunity. And with, you know, less competition and kind of SMS marketing not being as widely adopted as email, ultimately just decided to kind of jump right in, to be honest. So that's kind of also ties into the next point of like what inspired us to kind of start the company, right? It was to fulfill that need. You know, with e-commerce in particular, about 70% of people abandon their orders, abandon carts and checkouts before actually purchasing is one of those biggest pain points. And it also allowed us to, you know, have a company that is a direct driver of revenue, which obviously makes it super easy to sell to people because it's very clear on the kind of ROI that we do produce for our merchants and for our clients. So, yeah, that's really kind of what inspired me to start the company, kind of how I got started and a little bit about my background before getting it off the ground.
So like when you're developing this, you see the need for it and everything. What was it like developing it?
So I'll give a little bit of context. So my college roommate and one of my best friends growing up was a developer, but kind of had a feeling that, you know, it might not be the best idea to partner up with a longtime friend. And he had some other stuff going on. So as a non-technical founder like myself, right, I come from a business background. That was the first kind of challenge, right? Is finding a co-founder that is could be the CTO, could be the sort of lead developer. I mean, it was super, super random story. Like, honestly, I had a little bit of a following on Instagram. So I posted a couple of stories like, hey, I got a project I'm working on, you know, need a developer, you know, reach out to me if you know anybody. I think like 5 people reached out, and I reached out from the referral. This guy went to high school with someone who was a developer. Now in college, I literally like called him after like DMing him and kind of pitched him the idea. He loved it. And he was like, hey, like it's a sweet idea, but I don't think I could like take this on by myself. My college roommate is also a developer. I think he'd be a great fit. And little did I know at the time, like that guy that he had brought on would be like, you know, pivotal to the company. He's now the CTO. And honestly, I don't think the company would be where it is on a technical standpoint without him. So yeah, it was literally just like, you know, networking a little bit, cold calling and finding 2 technical partners to develop, you know, that out. And then the actual process, it was pretty much just outlining like the scope and what you're looking to do. Back then, we were pretty much a one product solution. So it was straight up just checkout recovery. So we would capture phone numbers at the Shopify checkout level. If someone didn't complete their purchase, we would automatically follow up with them and answer any questions they have, provide a discount. That's sort of our unique shtick, because it's conversational SMS marketing. So it's supposed to feel and look like it comes from another human, to ultimately get them across the finish line to complete that order. So once we kind of had that all scoped out, we pretty much set an expectation of like develop it out to an MVP in like 3 months. Back then I was using Fiverr and Upwork to like, you know, get a, to get like a dashboard made and everything, which, you know, if I showed you the first dashboard and website we ever had compared to where we are today, you'd definitely laugh alongside me. But hey, it's, you know, everyone's got to start somewhere. That's how we started. After those 3 months, it, you know, pretty much launched. We submitted to Shopify, which, you know, back then was a little bit more of an extensive process than it is now. They definitely streamlined it. I want to say it was like 4 to 6 weeks of back and forth on the submission before we were approved. And I remember we were approved like the week of my birthday in December. So we basically took it to the market, you know, end of December 2019, early January of 2020. And, you know, it's been going on ever since.
Such a cool story. I'm sure you have some competition out there.
Oh, how do you
differentiate yourself, you know, from your competitors?
With SMS marketing in particular, especially around Shopify, it's such a big platform. It is a super competitive space, and that's like, it's both a pro and a con, right? It brings a ton of eyeballs and awareness to the product. So it's, you know, it's helpful in that regard. So we're not like pioneering this new idea that's got to be like, validated in a market because it's never existed before. In terms of our competition, right, there's a bunch, and most of the competition, honestly, is much larger than us, right? You have the Attentives of the world. You have the Postscripts of the world. You have the Klaviyos, right? Like, even though that's an ESP and they're a little bit more complementary, there's a ton of SMS marketing companies out there. And this is just for Shopify. And a lot of them, they are, VC backed, much, much larger than us. I didn't kind of touch on it earlier. We're a small company, fully remote. We're bootstrapped. We do things a little bit differently. We kind of go at our own pace. And, I'm thankful for that as well. But yeah, the main, sort of differentiator for our customers is our just approach to the SMS marketing. But as I touched upon before, it's conversational, right? So we're actually developing out a generative AI agent. Previously, it was an open source kind of early days AI with some live agents that were overseas. So again, the way that we would message folks is just, very personalized, very conversational. It was not supposed to kind of be a spammy channel or come across as too salesy. And we see that in our metrics that it lends itself to higher, higher response rates, higher recovery rates, and ultimately a greater revenue lift for customers. And I think we're starting to see that change a little bit across the larger companies as they start to build that AI and kind of adopt that messaging. And then also our other sort of unique value prop, and this is ties into our kind of core customer, because we do service a lot of SMBs, a lot of drop shippers, whereas a lot of our competitors are focused on like 25 to 50 million dollar businesses. Like, it's a little bit different of a pond that they're kind of fighting for. We do intend to kind of move upstream in that regard, but we have our cart recovery and checkout recovery flow. It's performance based, so essentially you're not paying for the individual text credits for every single message that we're sending or receiving. So it's kind of the approach of, hey, only pay if we generate your revenue. So it is super attractive for a lot of, beginning entrepreneurs, small businesses, even companies that are doing, upwards of 2, 3, 5 million in GMV, because, a lot of people do appreciate that, kind of performance based, like, we'll give you a small cut, whether it's, depends on the plan, but it could be 5% of whatever we generate. Like, it does end up resulting in a lot of times 15, 20X ROI. I want to say off the top of my head, it's like 18 to 20X ROI is like the average ROI for customers. So it is super, super value aligned on both our end and the customer's end. We're incentivized for generating the revenue, and they get a fair price for it as well.
Do you mind if we talk a little bit about revenue?
Yeah, so I'll kind of, again, touch on like I'll kind of hit on the timeline, because our story is a little bit more unique, and I don't really build in public, but I am being a little bit more public in my approach kind of moving forward. So we went from zero to like 30,000 in MRR in 12 months, and this is, I'll highlight this or kind of, preface this as we were all part-time. We were all working full-time gigs at the time. And of course, no funding, bootstraps. So that I feel like was a pretty big milestone for us. We did kind of hit a wall, this is way back in 2020. Once we kind of hit that 30,000 level, we hit a pretty big like resistance wall just in terms of growth. Again, we were all working full-time, like making good money. And the original idea for this was honestly to like get it to 10K a month and just like have a little side hustle, right? Like, yeah. I think that's how a lot of entrepreneurs start out. It's like get a little side hustle, hit like 10 or 20K a month and kind of just let it ride. That's kind of what we did for like another year and a half to 2 years, is we just kind of did enough to maintain that level of like 30K. And we were all working and enjoying that and kind of just paying ourselves distributions. So it was more recent in the last, year and a half where we decided to focus on growth. I ended up going full time in the company, hiring people to help grow. So we kind of refined our pricing model a little bit, expanded. We jumped up to like 60, 65K in MRR. And then more recently, we just hit like 96,000 build for this month. So we're coming up on the 100K per month number. Since we have usage charges, right, that does fluctuate a little bit based on the value of the carts that we're covering, the kind of time of the year. I think 2024 and, as a whole has kind of been tough for e-commerce. So I could see that kind of bouncing between like 80 and 95 right now without any like additional growth. But our next goal is to basically hit the 2 million in ARR. So right around 150K a month. And then kind of our 2 year goal is the 3 million. So like 250K a month. It's kind of like where we're kind of focused and heading.
So you mentioned once you hit kind of around the 30 area, you mm-hmm. kind of a wall. What did you do to get past that?
Yeah. So after we kind of pivoted our strategy to focus on, cash flow and profitability, which was the kind of original response, we ended up just deciding to refine our pricing. We tested out some different pricing models. We raised prices because we kind of launched with an undercut pricing strategy, as I'm sure a lot of businesses do. Kind of makes it a little bit easier to compete. But over time, right, you don't really want to compete just on price. You kind of refine your offer and your service. And so we ended up raising prices and changing the pricing a little bit. And that did help catapult us like an additional 20K. Obviously, there were some other marketing channels that we would test on using, whether it was UGC and influencers or just paid ads to help us get there. But I will say, like, candidly, the, you know, biggest driver for growth recently has just been like locking in our pricing and raising prices, you know, year over year. I know, you know, a lot of people are usually hesitant to do that, myself included, but it usually ends up working out. And, you know, there's definitely some numbers that you can go into in terms of like how many people churn out to like kind of justify like, you know, what might make it work. But yeah, I would say for anyone that's, you know, watching and has a business, definitely don't be afraid to not only, you know, test and change your prices, but also raise your prices. If you're not raising your prices at least every 2 years, you know, you definitely are leaving money on the table. And there's definitely companies that do it every year. I don't see us changing or raising the prices again for at least 2 years because we kind of just did it fairly recently. And right now we're really internally focused on building out the product and offering a lot more service for what you get. So just driving a lot more value for the same cost, basically. And then we'll kind of reevaluate what that looks like. I think the next sort of logical step for us, right, we have like four tiers of pricing. I think the next logical step for us is to kind of simplify and consolidate our pricing. So maybe going down to the two or three options would probably be the next step for us.
I'm sure that's pretty scary. Raising your prices, you don't.
Yeah, especially when you're kind of in the SMB space, right? They do churn out pretty frequently. It's a little bit, obviously, it's actually very different than the mid-market and the enterprise clientele. Because you are kind of constantly battling that high churn and everything, but yeah, it's definitely needed, and it's definitely a massive lever for growth. And you can harness that; you'll unlock some new levels for the business for sure.
Moving on to like customer acquisition and growth, what strategies have really worked for you to gain your customers? I know you mentioned a couple, like once you got past the 30 mark. You go dive into that for a little bit for us.
Yeah, so to go from like 0 to 1 or, you know, 0 to 30K in this sort of example, we leveraged influencers, we leveraged paid ads on Meta, specifically like Facebook. And with our business, you know, we're listed on the Shopify App Store, and about 4 months after launching, Shopify rolled out their App Store ads program. So like that was kind of a gold mine in the early days. And, you know, with our product in particular, right, keep in mind there wasn't a lot of competition back then relative to today in SMS. And like when we launched with our like AI, it was like, you know, groundbreaking, even though it was, you know, nothing compared to what we have today. I mean, it was so new that people were kind of like, you know, very excited to try that. So there was definitely some hype around it. But yeah, paid ads on both Facebook and Shopify was a big lever for us. And then after that, I would say influencers have been a pretty big channel. Word of mouth, you know, just by building a great product and kind of being omnichannel present, word of mouth is a huge driver of growth for us. We've since launched an affiliate program, which hasn't been as big of a focus, but we do have a couple key affiliates. And it's also allowed us to more easily attract influencers that can, you know, earn a recurring payment and partner with us long term. We've tried Google Ads. I personally have never seen a ton of success with Google Ads. I know plenty of businesses use them. Same going for like cold email and outbound. Like just haven't seen it yet for us. And I don't know if it's our approach, if it's just outdated. I also kind of feel like with the segment of the market that we service, you know, they just aren't as receptive to that marketing channel. Probably more for like, you know, larger deals and enterprise type clients and sales. And then SEO has been like a long term focus for us for the last like 12 to 18 months. We've been pretty focused on SEO, blogging, backlinks, everything around that, and just driving traffic. And it's definitely been a long-term investment. A little bit hard to track, but I can definitely see the trends pointing in the right direction. So that's kind of been like the, you know, holistic overview of the different growth, you know, and acquisition channels for us and what's worked and what's not.
So like, so you get the customer and generated them. What do you do? Cause like churn's the big thing, right? How do you reduce that churn and keep your customers?
It's being really data driven, and that's been like one of the things that we kind of had to pivot to as we wanted to kind of, as you are, you know, asked earlier, break that kind of wall, right? Like when you kind of hit certain levels, as you probably know, there's like a playbook you kind of use to get there, and then you usually have to throw that playbook out and kind of reinvent it to like hit the next level, because there's definitely some sort of resistance or just new thing that you have to do to kind of get your business to that next level, right? In doing so, we added the, you know, mix panel into our company, which has really allowed us to kind of get granular on different customer insights and business metrics that we kind of didn't have before. And when you introduce these new things, it's like, you know, you kind of scratch your head and like, well, how do we even get here before? Because like now it's like, I can't even imagine running the business without this. It's been, you know, it's been big for us internally. For our customer support, we use Intercom. And, you know, when I started the company, one of the actual main reasons I started the company was because customer support across so many businesses suck. And I just wanted to provide like really, really good customer support, because I knew that would be like again, one of those key differentiators. Like, it sounds corny to say, but if you just provide great support, like, people really do appreciate it. I know I do, and it's so hard to find nowadays. Using a platform like Intercom has really allowed our team to provide top-notch support, and I still feel like there's a little bit of, you know, improvement for us to do internally, but it's something we're working towards. Quick response times, extensive knowledge bases, you know, offering to send out collaborator access codes to actually do the stuff for them, kind of white glove, regardless of what plan you're on. And then, you know, surveying them has been like a big thing, right? So we weren't using any sort of surveys, asking them how they found us, any sort of, you know, rating system. So we've introduced that in the last 12 months, just kind of get a better understanding of taking in feedback from customers, both on like how the support is working, but also what features they want to see to kind of help us, you know, validate where in the roadmap certain features should live. And that's been super effective. And then just in terms of churn, especially in the SMB side of things where we operate, the onboarding, I think, is like the number one thing that businesses should focus on, is just optimizing, testing, and monitoring your onboarding, because that's where you're going to, you know, make or break a lot of your initial churn. At least in the Shopify world, a lot of churn comes from day one. So within the first 24 hours, they'll be installing the app, they might leave. It's a very high, kind of disproportionately high number relative to other SaaS. So optimizing that onboarding, making it as, you know, streamlined and simple as possible, which for our company, right, since we kind of operate in the SMB space before kind of going upstream, I think that's also going to help us with the, you know, tackling that market upstream, just because we focus on such a efficient, self-serve, simple onboarding process that, like, you don't need these like extensive sales calls or processes to get onboarded. It really is like a 5-minute onboarding right now, and it is incredibly simple. I mean, once you get that app set up on your store, it could be, if you want it, a set it and forget it kind of operation. It's like as labor intensive or not, you know, kind of as you want, which I think is super helpful. And of course, we still have churn, and I think a lot of that comes from just like a misalignment on maybe expectations, or just like a kind of a smaller quality brand that, you know, isn't quite ready for the platform. And that's, you know, that's fine. That's also, so one of the other things too, is we dropped out our free plan, right? So I think that helped a lot with the churn too. We had a free plan for the first 3.5 years. It was free to install with 20% of revenue share with us. So it was a pretty good offer. But what we found is we were attracting just a lot of very brand new entrepreneurs, very small stores, even some scammers that are trying to like leverage SMS to like, you know, do like these, you know, fraud package type things. So we ended up dropping that, making it $29 a month and lowering that rev share down to 15%. And we haven't seen much drop. We've actually seen a pretty much a double increase in our trial revenue, which is pretty great. And now we're kind of just going to withhold that, you know, free plan as like a either a special offer around the holidays or for certain communities that we partner with, or something along those lines.
You did talk about this already a little bit. So like the customer feedback and how it influences your product. How do you like get a hold of these people, as far as like you just cold email your list and say, hey, we're trying a new product, try this?
No. So like I said, we use Intercom, which is it's a pretty great platform. It's like proactive support for like live chat. There's an integrated, you know, help desk, obviously. There's a knowledge base. There's an AI agent for that, you know, to help with resolutions. And there's also like surveys, automations, flows. So it's pretty comprehensive. So for us, we have some surveys that we'll send basically on, you know, certain rule sets. So we'll send that an NPS survey to kind of get feedback from 1 to 10, like how likely they are to recommend it to a friend. And within that sort of approach, you know, it's multiple steps, right? So after they kind of rate it, we'll kind of ask them on step two, like, which of these features would you like us to add next? We'll give them like our top 6 features or something that we're thinking about right now. And then on step 3, we'll ask them to leave a review. So that's kind of one automated way that we do it with our users. And then when they install, we'll ask them, you know, how did you find us? And we'll give them some drop-down options. And it just kind of helps validate for us, like where we're spending money, where we're not, you know, what's the kind of biggest driver of people installing. Like, it was kind of eye-opening for us. We haven't really spent any money on YouTube in a long time, but like YouTube, I think, is our third, you know, highest channel for like acquisition. So yeah, word of mouth is second. App store search is number 3. YouTube's right after that. So it just kind of helps illustrate for us internally, like how people are actually finding us. So we can identify if there's, you know, an opportunity to pour more time, effort, or money into that to, you know, generate better results internally. And then in terms of integrating that into our roadmap, we use Jira. So we'll kind of, we have to deal with that like an intake basically, but the way it is now, like if a bug gets reported in Intercom, or if someone kind of requests a feature through Canny, which is an integration we have into our dashboard, that'll populate into Jira. We'll be able to kind of rank and assign it and And we have sort of a public facing roadmap through Canny as well, on which people can basically comment and or vote on. And again, just helps kind of prioritize the level of effort or ranking of these different features.
So moving kind of into your personal insights of stuff, like how do you stay motivated as a founder? Like the days you wake up and you're just like, I kind of don't feel this. Do you have those days or do you always just feel driven?
Yeah. I think when I was working full time and doing this, it's tough to get into those slumps because you're just always doing something, right? Like I was up at 5:30 in the morning. I would drive an hour plus into the city. I'd be working until 5 o'clock, sitting in traffic for 2 hours, and then like have to find like the willpower to work even just like 2 hours, at night. And, like when I started this, I was super young. I was whatever I was, 20, 21 years old. Probably 21 years old. At the time I was still living at home. I had an office like set up in my basement. So like it would be fine. Like I'd work 4 or 5 hours at night and then get up again at 5 a.m. and kind of do it all over again. Since going full time, there's definitely days where you're like, I just don't want to do it today. And yeah. I've kind of like allowed myself to have some of those days as long as it's like once every 2 weeks. Like I kind of just have like a day where I can, take something for myself. I think is definitely important, and sometimes you've got to ride the highs and some just deal with the lows, to be honest. But it's just part of the process of being a founder. And you just kind of roll with it and take it with a grain of salt, and you just have to get back up when you get punched and keep moving forward, because it's going to happen. But the highs are definitely well worth it. And for me personally, I've always been very good at being sort of long-term focused, whether it's in my planning or just kind of goals. So I kind of like to be able to zoom out and just like not like if I have a shit day or even if a bad week, just I don't really let it kind of weigh too much on me, because I know like where we're heading and kind of zoom out and look at the progress we've made in such a short period of time. And I kind of find that to help keep me motivated as well.
Have you always wanted to be an entrepreneur, a founder? Have you always wanted to start your own business?
I have. Yeah. I mean, I remember being like a little kid. I want to say like, so I'll back up here. So being a super little kid, I've always just had like an affinity for like nice things. Like I've always loved like exotic cars. I remember like telling my dad, like, yeah, like I'm going to try and be like a millionaire by 30. Like I want to own like a Lamborghini. And I think I'm on track to do that. But yeah, and that's like million, like liquid, like my net worth, like I've already exceeded that by 26. But it's definitely different when you're talking about liquid. But yeah, my entrepreneurship journey started like really young. I want to say I was like 10 to 12 years old, and I would actually buy Nerf guns. And I would customize, mod, paint them, and I would sell them on eBay. So that was like my first ever business as a kid. So I've always just loved like building things. I've always loved like business and selling. So it's just been kind of like ingrained in me. And I feel like most entrepreneurs can relate to that. It's something that you kind of just have. I don't think it can be really taught, though there's plenty of people out there trying to teach it. But yeah, I've always been of that frame of mind. And I've just always just been super competitive, which I think is one of those other sort of key attributes. Very competitive, very driven, very ambitious. And I don't know that you can teach those.
Yeah, I started to do this. And then I started asking the question, what was your childhood like? Because it's because I have kids and I kind of want them to be ambitious when they grow older. Yeah. And plus, it's super interesting, I think, for people to see that there is really a correlation between like everybody I've interviewed. It was always they were selling things since they were kids. Mm-hmm. Super competitiveness.
Yeah.
How everybody is kind of like in the same pool.
Yeah, definitely. There's lots of commonality there.
So what advice do you have for somebody who wants to start their own business?
I think if you have that, internal drive or internal voice, like you'll know if you have that, right? If you kind of have that in the back of your head where you're just like super competitive, you've always wanted to do your own thing. Maybe you're in like a 9-to-5 job and you're just not feeling like fulfilled. Because that was also me. Like I knew I was kind of like, sounds like selfish to say, but it's true. Like you kind of feel like you're destined for something more. I would just say like, don't push that down, like embrace it would be like the first thing. And then obviously like once you do decide to start, like that's the most important thing, is just start. Because so many people, they can't start. They get like caught up in the research phase, which is great. Definitely do your research. But you kind of get into this like procrastination like wheel where you just never actually take action. So just take action as quickly as you can. But like to that end, don't like jump in head first. Like I would never suggest starting a company on something that's like not been validated and like, leaving your full-time job to like go do this thing. Cause at the end of the day, you still need money. You still need cash flow. So like the way that I, took that approach was probably a little bit different, but like I built this thing as a side project on the side while working full-time. And then once I was able to replace my income and I kind of saw the path forward, I ended up leaving my job and going all in on it. I think that's definitely, it's more of a conservative approach, but I would say it's the right approach for most people. And then, just don't quit. Like if you don't quit, you're probably not going to lose. You just kind of have to pivot and adapt, and you'll figure it out as you go. But and that's one of the, you know, other kind of frames of mind of successful founders. They're just not quitters. And again, sounds ironic to say, but it's true.
What's something that you've experienced, like a common misconception that about business, like you see all over the internet, like people just make it look easy on the internet?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just like everyone makes it look easy. And yeah, like, it's not, like, it's definitely not. And for the people that are making it look easy, like, they're doing that because they're usually selling you some sort of course or information. And the only thing I'll say to that is these people may have done what they're selling you on, but even if they did, and sometimes they don't, they're definitely not doing it anymore if they're taking the time to sell information or sell a course. Because I know, like, I have multiple businesses. I know how many like hours we have in a day. There's only so much you can do. So if you're like running this like 8-figure company and then like doing all this content and selling this course, like, it just doesn't add up. You don't have enough time to actually do that. So for these people that are selling courses, making it look super easy, flashing the exotic cars, like, their number one main, you know, source of income is that information they're selling you. Yeah. And it's fine. It's a business, but just make sure that you do the research on the people that you're dealing with. Make sure that, you know, they've actually done what they're saying they're doing. Cause like, I see it on our end too. Like, we work with a lot of like drop shipping influencers. Some of these guys are like some of the biggest drop shipping influencers, and they don't even run drop shipping stores anymore. Like, they are just making content, just selling the information. So yeah, just know that it's not going to be as easy as they'd say it is. You know, it's going to be longer hours than you probably think, especially in the beginning. And just be prepared for, you know, the ups and the downs of business, and just, you know, make sure that you're actually want to do this, and you're going to follow through on it. Because I feel like a lot of people kind of jump in with this naive mentality of it's, you know, super easy to make $20,000 a month, and it's going to take 3 months, and, you know, it's going to be sunshine and rainbows. And then they start the business, and, you know, they lied. It's not easy. You know, stuck at $500 a month, I quit my job, and now I'm like, you know, up creek without a paddle.
Yeah.
That's like the biggest, you know, misconception, I would say, for most people. It's just not going to be nearly as easy as the internet makes it out to be. And usually they're doing that so they can get you to pay for a course.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing ever takes the time you think. It's always like triple.
Yeah. And I guess I'll add to this too. Like, I've started all of my companies without any, like, buying any course. Now, granted, I went to college, right? You could argue that that is a very expensive course, obviously, but I went for a degree that, you know, I would still go back for, even though I ended up in a different path, because the education that I got for finance and economics definitely parlayed into like success for this business. I'm like, I don't need like a CFO or anything. It's like, I understand, like, I was very close to working on Wall Street for investment banking. So there's definitely, you know, knowledge there, and knowledge is important. Like, there's a ton of free resources too, especially in today's day and age. You have YouTube, right? Like, just learn to be resourceful. Google, AI, YouTube, books. Like, you can get your, you know, you can get your knowledge to start something more firsthand without having to invest, you know, $9.97 a month for, you know, someone that's on YouTube pushing a course. That if you can find a mentor, like, that's, you know, someone that you actually know that's like done it before, and maybe like, you know, selling information isn't their first stream of income, like, you know, definitely a hack, you know, would definitely advise it. But you don't need any of that stuff to get started. You know, you just need to do your own research, be smart about it. And again, just take action, and you're going to learn day to day, you know, running the business, and just kind of making sure that you take those lessons learned and kind of improve on it, and just get, you know, basically 1% better every day. As, you know, a lot of people like to say, you know, there's no better learning than actually doing the thing.
So coming into kind of the end of our interview, and I think we can kind of wrap these two questions up. What's next for your company? You got anything exciting on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, we got a ton of exciting stuff just in terms of like roadmap, right? So we're building out our generative AI agent to basically totally replace the conversational component that we have right now. Building out a ton of different features within our platform. So an SMS inbox, you can actually not only view the conversations in real time, but actually take them over if you so wish. Rebuilding out our campaigns product to just take it to that next level, adding in like 20 plus automations and flows, adding in a pop-up builder. So we're really focused on making a full SMS platform. So that you don't need to use a bunch of different tools. You can, you know, do everything you need to have a comprehensive SMS marketing program within TextGuard. That's kind of internally and kind of customer and product and feature facing. And then for like us, I had already kind of touched on my personal goals on where, you know, we're heading as a company. We're bootstrapped, but we are considering doing a small raise, whether it be friends and family or VC or angel investments, to help us kind of go a little bit further, a little bit faster. That's something that's maybe on the table. And we have those sort of, you know, internal company growth metrics and kind of North Star metrics that we're aligned on. And then who knows, I think at the end of the day, for most founders, especially kind of in a similar spot, like the the end goal is that exit, right? That's kind of where you come into realizing all of that hard work. So as much as I, you know, love the company and where we're going, I'm not going to say that I would be opposed to taking an exit in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. I think that would be a massive success for not only myself, but for all of our partners. And ultimately, you know, I want to make sure that the investor or the acquirer is going to be the best fit for our customers too. But that's kind of like long-term goals for me and for the company.
I appreciate you taking the time to meet with us, and can't wait to get this interview up.
Appreciate it.